I think it's time to get on the stick. I'm Joseph. This is Input English. The Input English channel provides you with free, comprehensible input. The reason I make all of these videos is to provide English that is clearly spoken and just a little slower so that you can follow it. Now, if the rate of speech is still a little too fast for you, no problem. Go down to the speed control on YouTube and just dial it back a little bit. I do this all the time. Sometimes people talk very quickly. And with YouTube, you have control. If you dial it back to 50% speed, it's going to sound very strange. But if you play it at 85 or 90% of the speed, you can understand it better. It gives your brain a little more time to process the words and extract the meaning from these sentences. I also do it in the other direction. If I am listening to content that, for instance, is in English, but the speaker seems to be speaking very slowly, I will put it at 110%. Perhaps 115%, and speed it up so that I don't waste my time because this poor fellow is talking too slowly. In other words, with YouTube, you have some speed controls that you may find useful. So I started with the phrase, the idea, it may be time to get on the stick. So what's that all about? Get on the stick is a casual expression, a saying, an idiom that we have in American English. You hear it fairly commonly. It means to get started with something, do something, start a process. The actual expression, get on a stick, developed in the early to mid 20th century in the US. And this stick that is referred to is the gear shift lever of an automobile. If you start driving a car, back when all the cars had manual transmissions, the first thing you needed to do was put the car into gear. Typically, one would push on the clutch pedal and then put the lever into the position for first gear. And then by releasing that clutch pedal, the car will start moving. So if you get on the stick, you start moving. So that was used metaphorically to express the idea that we need to start. We need to get moving. In the 21st century, most cars in the United States are automatic transmission. The car does the shifting of gears and the driver doesn't pay much attention to it. Certainly, we have to put the car into reverse if we're going to back up, and putting a car in reverse is certainly shifting gears. But going from the first through the fifth or sixth gear is not the province of the driver. That's done automatically. My car allows me to downshift, that is to slip the transmission into a lower gear if I want to slow down. We should talk about transmissions in another video. Let's stay with our original plan here, which is to talk about the idea of getting going. Other expressions are used to talk about starting something. Not just get on the stick, but get in gear, get going, get on your horse. These phrases all mean about the same thing. Let's get a move on. Let's make things happen. Now, let me quickly paraphrase Sir Isaac Newton. He said something that is apropos here and amusing. Newton tells us, as he explains inertia, that a body in motion tends to stay in motion, and a body at rest tends to stay at rest. He was describing inertia in terms of classical Newtonian physics. However, people notice that a body at rest tends to stay at rest. That is, if we are comfortable, if we're just sitting someplace enjoying ourselves, we might just stay there because it's comfortable. We need some sort of impetus to start moving or start doing things. We have a lot of things in our lives that are important, things that need to be done, should be done, and frequently they have deadlines. They have dates by which the task needs to be complete. Sometimes when we have a task that we are facing, we don't want to do it for various reasons, and we put it off. People say, well, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it next week. I might do it next year. I'll do it when I find the time. When we put things off to the future, in those terms, we are procrastinating. I remember as a kid learning the word procrastinate. The reason I remember it is that it was such a big word, and that word didn't give me any clues what it meant. I couldn't tell from hearing the word what it meant. But procrastination means putting something off when it should be done. When I was growing up, procrastination was described as a character flaw. It was described in terms of personal weakness. The messaging that I got about procrastination was that good people don't procrastinate. In other words, I was given a lot of guilt by the environment in which I grew up dealing with this concept of procrastination. It was clearly pointed out that it was bad, and if I did it, it was bad. Now, many years later, I realize that that's nonsense. Procrastination isn't bad. Now, it's not good for us. We'll get into that in a minute. But it should not be looked at as a character flaw. It's a challenge, and there are pretty straightforward ways to understand it and overcome it. So what is procrastination? It is human behavior. It is learned behavior, and it may be repetitive behavior. When one procrastinates, one puts off doing something that really needs to be done sooner rather than later. Postponing an activity in spite of the fact that that doesn't benefit us. So why does this happen? What is it about the human being that allows us to procrastinate? What is so unique about us? Our brain structure. We have different areas in the brain that are in charge of different activities. We think in terms of the prefrontal cortex as being the center for our executive function. It's where we make critical decisions. It's where we make choices. It's where the thinking occurs. But there are other areas in the brain that have very important functions, and for humans, they're a little harder to understand. We're less in touch with them consciously. They are happening as part of our automatic functions of the brain. What I'm talking about is the hippocampus. Typically, there are four structures described in the hippocampus. I don't want this video to degenerate into a neuroanatomy lecture that bores everyone. But the hippocampus is in charge of our basic feelings, our basic sensations. Fear, anger. The hippocampus helps us process sensations like hunger, thirst, sexual desires, as well as our desire to care for little children. We could say that those are primal instinctive sensations that we all have, and they are processed in the hippocampus. So you can see that there's an opportunity for the prefrontal cortex and the hippocampus to be at odds. We have sensations and emotions, and then we have thoughts and decisions. This is the interplay of brain functions that gives us our ability to procrastinate. So understanding that, how does procrastination come about? It's an emotional response to something. It is a behavior based upon emotions. So if we have a task before us and we put it off, why would we put it off? We might fear doing it. We might fear failing. We might have a fear of success. We might perceive it as overwhelming. It's just too big a task. I can't imagine doing that. Or it could be perceived as boring. Our hippocampus wants to have fun, wants to have pleasure. So the hippocampus does not encourage us to do boring things. It wants to have fun. It's the prefrontal cortex that has our willpower and our decision capacity, and it wants to do this task, even if it's overwhelming or boring. So procrastination is an interplay in our own brain, and it's normal. Clearly, it is not a character flaw. So if we say that procrastination is not a character flaw, is it good for us? Is it good or bad? In general, procrastination is maladaptive. It is not helpful. In most cases, if we have something that should be done, needs to be done, putting it off is not helpful. So I'm not saying that procrastination is good. I'm just saying that it's not a character flaw. It's a response to our brain to a stimulus, and it's an emotional response. There are a couple of ways you can see procrastination. One is just inactivity. Something needs to be done, and you simply don't do it. Another way you'll see procrastination is something needs to be done, and you do something else instead. When I was in college, I needed to study for exams. Sometimes, or perhaps often, I would find that that time to study for exams could easily be used washing the car, cleaning out a closet. I found any number of things that were less important but more attractive to me, and so I actively procrastinated. That is common human behavior. Different people, based on their personality, may have different reasons for procrastinating. Lack of confidence, anxiety, stress, boredom, perceived boredom associated with this activity that's being postponed, and perfectionism. I have to admit, I have a pretty good dose of perfectionism. I've dealt with that for years. When doing things, what's good enough? Perfectionism is another topic we should talk about in another video. Perfectionism frequently comes into play when we see procrastination. So how do we deal with this problem, this challenge of procrastination? If we see this behavior in ourselves, how do we respond? First of all, I want to recognize that it is not a character flaw. It's a behavior, it's an emotional response, and it can be overcome, but it is not something that I want to use to heap guilt on myself. I don't want to feel guilty about procrastination. The next thing is to recognize it. Sometimes we're postponing something until we are ready. Sometimes we are planning something, and the planning is part of the process, and it's not really procrastination. It's thinking about it and planning it. Sometimes it's procrastination. It's something that you dread. It's something you don't want to do. And for me, I just try to recognize it. Oh, it looks like I'm procrastinating on this. I need to make a change. Once we identify this behavior, there are some ways to overcome it. Sometimes the insight that it was procrastination is all that is necessary. If you realize you're procrastinating, you can say, okay, time to get on the stick. Time to get started here. There is a mechanism that has been recommended, and it may have some merit. It's easy to test it to see if it has any use for you. It's called the 3-2-1 method. What's it all about? Historically, and I think even now, when rockets are launched into space, there is typically a countdown. The time for the launch is set on the schedule, and as the time passes, it gets closer and closer to the launch time, and then it's time to launch. I can remember growing up watching on television the launching of rockets into space, off to the moon. These launches typically had a countdown. The classic countdown is 10, 9, 8, 7, and so on down to 1. So 3, 2, 1 is just a short countdown. 3, 2, 1, start. Let's say that I needed to put the wash in, but I've been putting it off for a couple of days, and I realize that I procrastinated. I could say, 3, 2, 1, and get out of the chair, go to the laundry room, put the wash in the machine, turn it on, and let the machine work its magic. 3, 2, 1 could also be expressed in different terms. Ready, set, go. Ready, set, go is the way races sometimes are started. The racers come to the starting line. Perhaps they have a particular position they should be in. For instance, some sprints have starting blocks so that the participants put their feet into this device so that they can spring forward very quickly and perhaps trim a fraction of a second off their time. In order that the race be fair, everyone in the race should be given the same information about when the start is. And so the starter frequently says, ready, set, go. Sometimes races are started by firing a pistol with a blank cartridge to make a very loud sound. Now that would not be something I want to do in the house. But if I want to start something that I'm putting off, I might say, ready, set, go. That's the moral equivalent of 1, 2, 3, go. I think for me, the psychology of starting an activity begins with the beginning of the countdown. We have all learned that countdowns result in a beginning. And so really, if I say, ready, set, go, I typically automatically start working on it, start doing it. How do we deal with our emotions with respect to procrastination? Usually the best way to handle them is insight. If I have a task that seems overwhelming or seems boring, a task that I am a little fearful of because I might fail, I might have problems, I usually just recognize those feelings. Understanding that they exist is usually enough to help me overcome them. Now, of those reasons to not want to do something, an overwhelming task gives us other options. An overwhelming task can be broken down into very small steps, baby steps, and baby steps can help us accomplish a very big project that might seem overwhelming, but the component steps in that project are very easy and straightforward. I'll give you an example. In a previous video, I talked about the folding bicycle, the Bike Friday, that I have used. And for 2 years, I have been thinking I should get that bicycle on the road. In order to do that, I wanted to clean and lubricate the chain. I wanted to change both tires and both inner tubes. I wanted the bike to be reliable. I made a video about changing the front tire because it was very easy to do, but I never got around to the rest of these tasks. I procrastinated. Toward the end of 2025, I decided to get on the stick. I chose baby steps as the method by which I would proceed. My first step was to bring the bike up from the basement. The second step was to remove the rear wheel. The third step was to remove the tire and inner tube. You can follow that the next step would be putting the new tire and inner tube on, inflating it, and then installing it in the bike. I test drove the bike, and each of these steps occurred on different days. I didn't try to complete this project as a single event. I just wanted to do those little steps. Along the way, there was the revelation that I had bought a very inexpensive inner tube and it leaked. So there was an added step of buying a new tube, installing the new tube, and testing that. In other words, I had a setback. If we have a big project and we are using baby steps, a setback can cause more procrastination. We can get overwhelmed by the setback. Luckily, I was not. I ordered the new tube, I installed it, and now the bike is ready to go. I didn't have to overcome my desire to procrastinate on this whole project. All I had to do was do one little simple baby step and check it off. I use baby steps all the time. Really, in language learning, we use baby steps. You cannot just learn a language, but you can pursue behaviors that allow you to acquire the language because of an infinite number of baby steps. When I get up in the morning and put on the coffee, I don't think it's time for me to learn Spanish. No. What I'm thinking is it's time for me to watch a video in Spanish. My baby steps are just consuming input. In the United States, we have a recurring event that the citizens need to deal with every year. It's called tax time. We are required to submit documents to the federal and state government that document our tax liability, and we may need to pay taxes, or we might be entitled to a refund of taxes that we have already paid into the system if we're overpaid. Filing those documents is called filing your tax return, and the deadline every year for most of us is April 15th. On the 15th of April, those documents need to be sent in. They need to be submitted. So how do we approach this, we citizens of the United States? How do we do this? Looking at the facts, you might conclude that the best way to handle it is to file all the documents as soon as possible, perhaps in January or maybe early February. Get it out of the way, get it done, and then don't even think about it anymore because it's a completed task. I think that is the best way to do it. But a lot of us procrastinate. We put it off. Why? It's an unpleasant task. It might be boring. It could seem overwhelming. And there are a lot of other things that our hippocampus has identified that we would rather do. So procrastination in the U.S., when it comes to filing income tax returns is super common. Sometimes people will file for an extension so that they can continue procrastinating into the summer until the 15th of June. I don't like filing extensions. I would much prefer to submit all the documents as early as possible and get it done so that I don't have to think about it. How do I do it? Typically, insight, baby steps, and 3, 2, 1, or ready, set, go. I don't try to use willpower. I would rather use insight. Historically, I put off learning languages by procrastination. I knew I wanted to learn various languages. I had tried my hand at it, and my results were not very good. I found the process of studying grammar and vocabulary boring, and I found the idea of learning a language overwhelming. This is a perfect setting for procrastination. Now, instead of putting off language learning, I'm acquiring two languages at the same time. So what's the difference? Am I just a better person? I'm just more effective? I'm just using insight, baby steps, 3, 2, 1, and habit. I hope you enjoyed this discussion. I have to admit that I despised procrastination, and I despised being accused of it by someone else or by myself. I find it very freeing to have these useful strategies to overcome this old nemesis of mine called procrastination. I hope you are subscribed to the Input English channel. If not, please hit that subscribe button. It's right here, and it's free. It really helps the effort to get this input out to other people. I invite comments below, and if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.